Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nastaparesu Badresu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Sloke Bhakti Bhavati Nayastike. So today is an unusual day in the sense that we are not directly speaking from the Srimad Bhagavatam or not from the book Bhagavat, but we are speaking about the person Bhagavat. In particular, how 52 years ago Srila Prabhupada incorporated ISKCON, and a very commemorable moment, and we reflect for a moment on the nature of ISKCON. I heard that Brahmananda Prabhu used to give this class, and what can I say? He was there in 1966, not only at that time, but even when he was here, he was still completely there in 1966. Whenever you were with Brahmananda, he would just bring that whole moment to us. I can't do that, obviously. I wasn't there in 1966. So I'll have to approach it in a different way. So I'd like to begin with Lord Chaitanya, who is Namo Maha Vananyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Guru Tvishana Maha, who is the most magnanimous incarnation, who appears only once in a day of Brahma. It is said that Lord Krishna appears in the 7th Manvantar in the 28th millennium, and that in the Kali Yuga, after the Dwapara Yuga where Krishna appears, that then Lord Chaitanya appears also only once in a day of Brahma. We're seeing that Lord Chaitanya spread Krishna consciousness across India, and but we're seeing that through others, and particularly through Srila Prabhupada, he spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So we understand that Srila Prabhupada is the embodiment of the mercy of Lord Chaitanya personified. We understand that he was so absorbed in his service to the Lord and so absorbed in the mission of the Lord that from the very beginning, his agenda was to deliver the entire universe. And he would have gone beyond, but we are limited in our physical existence. Srila Prabhupada came to New York, and it was interesting for the local people there, because young people were looking to deeper meaning in life. Young people had started to read books about spirituality. Some were turning to Buddhism, some were turning to the Vedic scriptures of the East. It was the time. Brahmananda came to New York, came from New York to India in 1964. So that before it started. When Prabhupada landed with the Yamaduta, again, Jaladuta, something with names this morning. The Jaladuta. When Prabhupada landed with the Jaladuta in New York, when Prabhupada came off the ship, a few hours later, Keith and Howard boarded the ship, the same Jaladuta, to go to India to find a guru. So that is such a detail. And they came to Calcutta, and they didn't find a guru, but they did some shopping. They bought some posters and things, which they later brought back and later became part of Matchless Gifts. One of these posters was the Satbhuj form on Lord Chaitanya. Another one was, well, Hayagriva wasn't sure what it was, some sort of animal figure. And Hayagriva asked, it was Hanuman, and Hayagriva asked if he was a cat. He didn't quite, couldn't make out from the picture what Hanuman's form was. So they had no idea what they were bringing, but they brought these things to the storefront. So the storefront began not as ISKCON, but simply as Swamiji with a few followers who were having regular programs, and people liked it. It was interesting. An exotic personality, a personality who was really learned, who could really, like, was authentic, who was really speaking from some tradition. So, the real thing, who also was an incredible musician, who could really drum like no one else could. There seemed to be so much behind this personality. But no one understood to the fullest extent who Prabhupada really was. They could not understand the depth of his Krishna consciousness, of his devotion. They could not understand how he was the especially empowered representative of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In the Bhagavatam, it is said, Tatvak visargo janatak aviplavo yasmin pratislokam abadhavati api namani anantasya yasun kitanya srimanti grinanti gayanti sadavaha. It is said that it is the Bhagavatam that will bring about a revolution in the world, which is in a misguided, misdirected civilization. And it was Bhagavatam that Prabhupada brought to the West aboard the Jaladuta. It was the Bhagavatam that he had in three parts, three volumes, the first canto that he brought with him. And those were the first books that some of the followers were purchasing from him and were reading. So Srila Prabhupada very much came with this spirit of making a revolution, of changing the entire world, single-handedly taking on this mission, not knowing really how to proceed, as he said in Markine Bhagavad Dharma, the song he wrote while he was on the Jaladutta. Prabhupada was saying, it's like, he didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to convince these people who were like addicted to all the four illicit activities. And finally he said, I can see no way. There's nothing I can say to convince them. The only thing I can possibly do is repeat your words. So that was the foundation of what Prabhupada was doing, repeating the words of Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna, and then leaving it up to Krishna, trusting in Krishna, and so on. But at the same time, although for the result, Prabhupada was very much depending on Krishna, because it was beyond any human being's power to change New York, change America, change the world. Everyone was very surprised when during one program in the Matchless Gift storefront, suddenly a lawyer stood up in the back and needed some people to sign on the incorporation document. A few people, of course, were aware of it. Mukunda was aware of it. He had arranged for Carl Jurgens, who was involved with the Paradox restaurant and therefore had experience with legal things and had some connections with lawyers to assist and make the arrangements for a lawyer to come. And so, then the lawyer called for some volunteers, and some people on the spot were just becoming trustees and signing ISKCON into existence. No one thought much of it. No one really thought such a thing was very necessary. No one thought it was a momentous moment. Everyone thought, somehow or other the Swami wants this, so let's do him a favor. He is, after all, he is a very, very inspiring personality, so we want to do something for him. At that point, as I said, they still did not realize who he was, but an inspiring personality he was, and wanting to do a favor, definitely. They were ready. So they signed on the incorporation document. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is writing how Lord Chaitanya's movement is spreading, and he is describing how initially the seed of pure devotional service was germinating in Madhavendra Puri, and then from Madhavendra Puri came the roots of the tree, which were nine sannyasis made by Madhavendra Puri, and that then the Bhakti Kalpataru, the wish-fulfilling desire tree of devotional service, began to grow. It said Lord Chaitanya was the gardener, and Lord Chaitanya also became the trunk of the tree. Then at the top of the trunk split in two. One major branch was Nityananda, another major branch was Advaita Acharya, and then from these branches, so many branches came, and many, and all of these branches were great Vaishnava personalities around whom various groups of Vaishnavas formed, and various spiritual masters along with his disciples. So as the branches of the Chaitanya tree are being described, Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport, ISKCON is also a branch of the Chaitanya tree. So, in this way, we appreciate how the mercy of Lord Chaitanya is present in this movement. And Srila Prabhupada, in creating the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, had two main purposes in mind. The first and foremost being that ISKCON would be a vehicle for spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. That it would be possible to open many temples. Even in the very beginning in New York, Prabhupada wanted a temple. There was no money, but he wanted a big building. He wasn't looking at anything according to his means, something small, a step up from where they were. No, he was looking for something substantial. All along, he was thinking in this way. So, ISKCON as a vehicle, as a facility for the preaching mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That was Prabhupada's first and foremost purpose. The second purpose was to provide shelter. To provide shelter for all those people who would take up Krishna consciousness. Because where to go for shelter? Everyone in this world needs shelter. And if one tries to be a Vaishnava, then Maya, it is Jagadananda Pandit in the Prema Vivarta, he says, Niketista Maya Tara Japati Ahaya. Nearby, Maya is waiting, ready to slap you down. Not waiting for us to fall down. No, ready to slap us down. So that's a little more serious. So when we come too close to the edge of Maya, then Maya will help us to get over the edge. No problem. So this is very strong statement. So protection is very important. Such protection means that it must be a place of spiritual nourishment. Spiritual nourishment, Srila Prabhupada, being a totally dedicated follower of his spiritual master. In a letter to Jaya Pataki Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada writes that there was the prediction from the Lord that this movement will spread to every town and village. So then there was the order of my spiritual master. So then let us make it a reality. Prabhupada was deciding, yes, then let us do it. And so he decided to take on this mission of giving Krishna consciousness to the entire world. Prabhupada said, my spiritual master had many very qualified disciples. Some were very learned, some very advanced. He said, why is it that this miracle happened to me? Why is it that this miracle happened to me? Then he says, I can only think of one thing. I can only think of one thing. That I 100% followed the order of my spiritual master. And with that he put the emphasis on his spiritual master. Not on like, I 100%. You know, that is the emphasis. No, the emphasis is, because of my spiritual master, the power was there. The power of the Lord was coming to the parampara to his spiritual master. And therefore, by being the servant of his spiritual master, it was possible that this miracle could happen. So in this way, he was trying to explain how it possibly happened by the mercy of his spiritual master. And in this way, by the mercy of the parampara and the arrangement of the Supreme Lord, ISKCON became the vehicle of spreading Krishna consciousness. We can see how much Srila Prabhupada was focused on preaching Krishna consciousness, and how much ISKCON was a preaching mission. How much everyone became involved in pushing forward Krishna consciousness all over the world. And although it started with a humble beginning and some struggle, we can see that at one point this movement was gaining more and more momentum. Prabhupada was traveling around the world at that stage, temples everywhere, his ISKCON being not only incorporated in America, but ISKCON being established all over the world, being registered in so many countries, being registered and being registered in India, coming back to India, establishing temples in the holy dhams, establishing a temple in Mumbai, and like this, so many endeavors made, and tirelessly traveling and managing this preaching mission. At the same time, Prabhupada continued translating his books. At the same time, Prabhupada was asking his disciples to read his books. Initially, the publishing of the books was also part of ISKCON. First, it started as ISKCON Press, and being part of ISKCON. But then Prabhupada incorporated the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust for the sake of his books, so that they would be protected in a separate way. And maybe with a separate focus, and not being part of all the turbulence that a preaching mission may expect. Because a preaching mission is trying to create a revolution in people's lives, and is trying to make them change their life, not just a little bit. It is not that, yes, you add a little bit of Krishna consciousness to your life. No. As Srila Bhaktisiddhanta stated, that this movement is meant to bring about a total revolution in the world. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta also said, it's meant to crush materialistic civilization. It is diametrically opposed to anything we do in the material world. Everything has to change. What is day for the materialist is night for the devotee, and the other way around also. In other words, a complete change. This movement, it is amazing that this movement is spreading around the world, because this movement is demanding that we give up everything we ever did. That we change the way we do basic things in our lives. Ahara, nidra, vayu, maitanam cha. These four things. Eating, mating, sleeping, defending. All these things now are meant to change. A different diet, only Krishna prasad. Yakya sistasino santamuchante sarvakilbisai. Only Krishna Prasad, otherwise sinful. Who can say that they've only taken Krishna Prasad in their life? So it was a change. Even now, sometimes we see how old habits die hard. We see how it's difficult for us as individuals to fully embrace this Krishna consciousness in all details. Sometimes to offer, say all these mantras, you know, then Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, or, you know, throw the hands in the air, Anand, Anand. Also difficult to fully adjust our life to Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada founded his movement on the teachings of Srila Rupa Goswami, because Srila Rupa Goswami was the one who formulated many of the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in writing. And thus, we are Rupanugas. Thus, we are followers of Rupa Goswami. Srila Prabhupada was basing his movement on the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam, and established all these things, enshrined all these things in this movement. So the incorporation of ISKCON, just a legal document, is not really what we're looking at. We're looking at the way how he constructed ISKCON, how he at one point spent time in Los Angeles and made it his headquarters in the Western world, and that there he began to establish more and more a morning program, and that morning program then he invited temple presidents and leaders from around the world to come to Los Angeles and to see how it was being done, and that from there it would spread and become established everywhere. And we see how gradually how he constructed a culture, a spiritual culture in ISKCON. Like now the morning program is untouchable, practically speaking. Right? I mean, we cannot really decide, well, we've done this now for such a long time, we decide to change it. We want something else now. We go along with the times. It's outdated. Doesn't fit anymore in the modern time. We'll just, you know, chant japa in the morning from now on. That's much more practical. And, you know, we do something else. No, that would be an outcry could be heard all over the world if we would dare to touch the morning program. So Srila Prabhupada in this movement enshrined many things. When Srila Prabhupada incorporated this movement in 1966, it was maybe almost awkward that in a following of hippies, who were basically young people who didn't want to be part of society. They had decided that society was going in the wrong way, and therefore they decided, we're not going to be part of it. They, I can say we, because I was also like that. So that generation basically decided that the generation before us has taken society in a wrong direction. They have created professions that are destructive. They have created educational institutions which are not contributing to the happiness of the world. The young people of that time understood this point. And thus they had come to the point where en masse, that means that many people were just rejecting society. They dropped out of society. They were known as dropouts, people who had dropped out. Not everyone did it thoughtfully. Not everyone was aware of that. Some were thinkers. They were more aware. Others just followers. Do what everyone did. But the thinkers knew what they did. Therefore, they were suspicious of organization. They were allergic to institution. It was the last thing in the world they wanted to have anything to do with anything organized. And rightly so, in one sense. We see that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is speaking about organized religion and says, organized religion is the death of the true religious spirit. He speaks about the dams and the dikes that try to limit the flow of bhakti, which is just flooding the entire world. And yet he created an organization. One reason why Srila Prabhupada started with an organization is simply his spiritual master also did it. But Prabhupada could see the need for incorporating, for creating a society. When we look for a moment at the history of Lord Chaitanya's movement, it's interesting, Lord Chaitanya really started preaching after sannyas. We see that during the sannyas ceremony, everyone was getting very depressed somehow or other. The barber was shaving Lord Chaitanya's head. He didn't want to, but his hand did it. Took a long time. After that, he just became a sweet maker. He gave up this whole mission. The mood was, how terrible that such a young man is taking sannyas. But then, after Lord Chaitanya finally had received the mantras, formally taken sannyas, he felt such a liberation, because he felt, now I am just free to 100% give my life to Krishna. No longer do I have to hide anything. Now I can just publicly worship Krishna. So all that love that had been hidden for all this time burst out, and he became very ecstatic. He danced in such ecstasy, and everyone danced with him, and it was just amazing. Then soon after, Lord Chaitanya starts a tour of South India. And this, in the same way, very ecstatic, ecstatic kirtan, also preaching philosophy, and so on. But we at the same time see that Lord Chaitanya at the time didn't bring with him any society, any institution. He didn't bring with him any books, and he was not acting as a spiritual master and in this way formalizing relationships. So he was preaching. But if today we go through South India, what remnants are there? Yeah, a few little traces we find. But not like any big establishments, nothing left. No place where a whole large contingent of Gaudiya Vaishnavas are present. We don't see that. When Lord Chaitanya began to develop, when he sent Rupa and Sanatan to Vrindavan, then an institution began to form, a parampara institution began to form. Then we see there were temples, they wrote books, holy places, they became disciples, and they also made disciples. A parampara began to develop, and people could connect. There was a clear place. Oh yes, Vrindavan, that's where it is. Oh yes, Vrindavan, temples, yes, yes. Oh yes, Madan Mohan, the principal deities established, Madan Mohan, Govindaji, Gopinath, which sort of represent the philosophy, Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana, the connection, the teaching, and finally realizing the full glory of Raja Bhakti, and so on. All that was becoming manifest in an institutional form, but in a parampara institution. The Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, then, that was the first time the Gaudiyas had more than a parampara institution, but made some sort of formal institution as Gaudiya Math, which was meant to continue as an entity after Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's departure, which was meant to continue then with a governing board, right? An institution with a governing board. Others had done that. The Madhavas had done it, even at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They were a formalized institution in response to Sankaracharya, who created his maths. The Ramanuja Sampradaya, they did it after Ramanuja Acharya, but they had their institution now for about 300 years. So the Gaudiyas were, the Nimbarkas did it, the Gaudiyas did it the last. Right? So then the Gaudiyas in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta started to give shape in an institution. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, the Gaudiya Math existed in his presence as one institution, but he basically was a spiritual master with his disciples. Then after his departure, Gaudiya Math sort of broke and splintered in different groups. So in that way, it didn't really exist. Prabhupada started with an institution and also created a governing body that was to continue after his departure. And he invested authority in them as ultimate managing authority. What that means, that can be discussed, and there is plenty of discussion, plenty of papers are written. Personally, although I've read all the papers, with all due respect to the intelligence in these papers, I think the last word has not yet been spoken as to what it means, ultimate managing authority. Because it's complicated. Only three words. What does that mean? That's a big discussion. Anyway, so now we have an interesting time because we have a dual institutionalization. We have, on the one hand, it's called, oftentimes referred to as parallel lines of authority. We have our parampara institution, and we have the organizational institution. Some might think, well, the parampara institution is more spiritual than the organizational institution. No, that is not true. That is not true. Because, as I said earlier, the spiritual teachings are enshrined. On the surface, ISKCON is, I don't even know if you could call it an organization, but anyway, what it is, it is. On the surface, there is an attempt in the material world to create an organization so that Krishna consciousness can be practiced and supported and spread all over the world. On a deeper level, there are the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu coming via Rupa Goswami, coming via the Parampara, via Srila Prabhupada, his books, and all the principles that he enshrined in this movement, all his instructions. That is there in this movement. So that is the substance. On the surface, we have seen successes and failures. On the surface, we went through a lot and may still go through a lot to come. On the surface, we have seen Krishna consciousness spreading in glorious ways, and on the surface we have seen fall downs, we have seen dishonesty, we have seen so many problems, right? Gurukul issues, you name it. The history of ISKCON is one that has its ups and downs. On the deepest level, we can see how Lord Chaitanya is personally driving this movement. Prabhupada once said that just like Mother Yasoda is always worried about Krishna and she's always making arrangements for Krishna's protection, actually there's no need because Krishna is the Supreme Lord. What's the point? There's no need. He said in the same way, I'm always worrying about ISKCON and I'm always making arrangements for ISKCON's protection. But what is the need? It's a transcendental movement like this. He made that comparison. On the deepest level then, we see this movement is driven by Lord Chaitanya himself. He is spreading this movement all over the world. We are helping and getting the credit. And Prabhupada is helping in a giant way. So we're looking at three layers. These layers correspond with Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojan. On the surface, ISKCON provides a facility to make a connection. On a deeper level of Abhideya, ISKCON provides a facility for actually practicing the spiritual process. And on the deepest level, everything is there within this movement. Anyway, these parallel lines of authority exist side by side in this movement. A parampara authority and an institutional authority. And both of these are needed for protecting us in our spiritual life. ISKCON offers us a place to live, or a way of life at least, something to connect to, a temple we can go to for shelter. So ISKCON, without ISKCON, where is shelter? Of course, there are many branches of Lord Chaitanya's tree also, so there are other branches in the world that are still alive and still carrying the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. But it's no doubt that ISKCON is the main branch at this stage, the main branch to which the mercy of Lord Chaitanya is flowing into this world. And that Srila Prabhupada was the main personality, the main representative of Lord Chaitanya in the world. First Krishna came once in the day of Brahma, then Lord Chaitanya came in the day of Brahma to spread Krishna consciousness, and then Prabhupada came to take it still a step further. And Prabhupada then established Krishna consciousness And he said, when a disease, when one is infected with a disease, at one point the disease sets in and it has gone too far. It cannot be stopped. He said, in the same way, we have infiltrated the Western world. This movement, now this movement cannot be stopped. So Prabhupada did it. He really brought Krishna consciousness from east to west. It cannot be stopped. In this way, here we are today, and first of all, we have become caretakers of ISKCON. Right? It's now, it's our responsibility to look after. I once heard one of Srila Prabhupada's early disciples say, in ISKCON, 10% of the people do 90% of the work, and 90% of the people do 10% of the work. I mean, and maybe that's even flattery to give the 90% 10% of the work these days. I'm not so sure. There's many people are taking advantage of ISKCON. Oh yes. Many people are ready to say, where's the prasad? Yeah? Walk in, where is it? Yeah? I'm a devotee, you know. Where's my room? Where's this? Where's that? But who is thinking of what to do? Like, here we are, Vrindavan, our spiritual headquarters, along with Mayapur. Who's thinking about this? Some people are thinking about this. That is the way. I won't go on forever with this lecture. I could, but in the Bhagavatam, there's a description of how Vamana cracks the shell of the universe and the Ganges. A drop of the causal ocean comes in, and it's the Ganges. And as Ganga is coming down, the demigods are fully aware of what is happening here. They realize that this is the direct mercy of the Lord coming down to just grace the entire universe. And they realize, what do? They bring kumbhas, and they catch it, that mercy. They catch a little bit of the Ganga, and they carry it on their head. Why are they doing that? Why are they not just standing there and sort of catching the Ganga? Catching the mercy. No. They realize that if we catch the mercy in these kumbhas, in these pots, and we carry it on our head, then we become part of distributing it. Then we get even more mercy than we would get if we just receive it on our head. In the same way, those who actually take ownership of ISKCON, who actually feel ISKCON is ours to take care of, not just to maintain nicely, but to develop, to make stronger, better, to spread wider. Those who take that proprietorship, they are getting more mercy. They are carrying it in vessels, golden vessels on their head, and spread that mercy everywhere. They are the ones who will get the most benefit of ISKCON. So this is really what we should do. So we should look, what service can I do? What service can I do? And I'll end with where Srila Prabhupada said that, he said, I have one problem. I have one problem. You know, in my personality, I have one problem. Right? And Prabhupada said, my problem is that I cannot think small. So we should not forget that as we are inheriting ISKCON, that we're also inheriting Prabhupada's problem. So when we think about taking care of ISKCON, we can also not think small. We have to think big. Yeah, I know. I was looking at him also. We have to do something big, not just a little. Prabhupada was like that. This Krishna Balaram Mandir, how this money came when ISKCON was not famous, when nobody cared about Hare Krishna. Somehow or other Prabhupada wanted it, and somehow or other Guru Kripa said, "Don't worry, Prabhupada, I will get you the money." And he did. And for that, you know, for that incredible endeavor, for taking all that trouble for Prabhupada, the mercy is just continuously raining down upon him. There's no doubt about it. So let us think about that. Let us take advantage and do something. Really do something big. What to do? For Prabhupada's pleasure. And push on this movement all around the world. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.